Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
And when you're taking them off of children, age of 15 years of age, who decides that, you know, the best way to resolve a dispute is to pull a gun and shoot somebody in front of a school, that's unacceptable. And I don't care how old you are, you have to be held accountable.
That's D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti today lamenting yet another day of gun violence in the district. It's just one of several stories we're analyzing at the Reporters Roundtable tonight. Also on deck, gun arrests at a Prince George's County high school on the first day of school. More than a dozen county police officers indicted. The late former mayor of Hyattsville accused of stealing millions from the school he worked for. Water problems in Jackson, Mississippi, and no more grazing in the grass for some parts of Prince George's County. We have a lot to talk about tonight. My guests are Tracy Wilkins, Prince George's County Bureau Chief for NBC4 Washington, and Troy Johnson, anchor reporter for WAPT-TV in Jackson, Mississippi. If you have a comment, if you have a question about any of the stories we're talking about tonight, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Tracy, Troy, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Always a pleasure. And hi, Troy.
Hey, what's up, Tracy? And Harold, what's going on? Good to be here.
Well, a lot is going on. Tracy, I'm going to start with you in the district. Of course, we had three teenagers shot in D.C. today in two separate incidents. All three of them expected to be okay, but this is just, you know, another round of gun-related violence that we have seen in the district. Certainly, you know, the other parts of the DMV, not immune. We talked about this on our program last night. It's a really rough time right now for the DMV when it comes to gun violence, Tracy.
It is. And 27 juveniles in the district have been arrested and charged with violent gun incidents just this year. And we're seeing this across our region, but what's happening right now in the district, what's happening in Prince George's County, the entire community, everyone needs to be upset. Everyone needs to be frustrated. Everyone needs to be figuring out how we can come to the table and deal with what's happening with our young people and these decisions they're making and picking up these guns. You know, and in this incident, we had three kids who weren't in school when they should have been in school. Mm-hmm. And what we know for sure is that when our teens are where they're supposed to be, the chances of them being involved in something like this, it's far less likely. When school's in session, that's where kids need to be. Yeah. And it's so that's one of the bigger issues as we get back into school is why weren't they there?
You know, Troy, you're in Jackson, Mississippi. Last night on our program, while we were kind of talking about what was happening in D.C., this isn't happening in a vacuum. There seems to be a nationwide problem with gun violence, particularly as it relates to young people.
Absolutely. It is definitely a problem that's mirrored here in Jackson, which you're seeing in Washington, D.C., definitely mirrored here. And I've heard stories and read about stories in Chicago and Detroit and other major metropolitan cities where young people have kind of been at the forefront of a lot of the crime that has been happening. You know, all of us on this phone, no offense, are of a particular age, and we remember the terminology of carjackings and drive-by shootings. You know, if you think of the movie, Boys in the Hood,
mm-hmm.
Drive-by shootings were an essential part of what they described in that movie that was based in Los Angeles. Those terms are back now. Police officers, when they're doing their press briefings and letting folks know about a crime that happened, we're hearing about carjackings. We're hearing about people pulling up on vehicles and shooting inside another vehicle and indiscriminately injuring the person that they may be shooting and maybe other people in the car. And a lot of this has been driven by youth. You know, I think a lot of analysis has been that there are not things for kids to do right now, especially coming out of the pandemic, you know, that, but at the same time with the technology that they have at their disposal, just like we do, it's a lot of copycatting, of crimes that they see on YouTube or they see on social media. And I think those who are kind of predisposed to wanting to do something, maybe go viral or just, you know, whatever, are starting to mimic things that they've seen in other cities, in other places.
And, you know, there was a terrible close call on Sunday. Rookie running back for the Washington Commanders, mm-hmm. Brian Robinson Jr., I was expected to start for the Commanders on 8th Street, coming out of an eating establishment, just going to his car. And police were saying it was either a robbery or a carjacking. And he was fortunate, shot in the leg and also shot, I believe, in the arm as well. But very, very fortunate that he survived. He's, you know, back at training camp. The coach says he could have an opportunity to play. But I think it's just really it's unfortunate PR for, you know, for the district that is really trying, Tracy, to address this issue.
Yeah, you know, as a native Washingtonian, it's heartbreaking.
Yes.
Right. And we definitely saw that it looked like our region was in a better place. Post-pandemic, we have, it's incredible. And covering this, covering these issues, looking at what's happening with crime, and seeing it feels so pervasive. You know, folks just don't feel safe in the city. And they don't feel safe because they're not.
Yeah.
And the community is so fractured. And our children are so confused. And they're so lost that you know, as a mother, I'm just at a loss for words for what we're supposed to do as a community to make this situation better. Because the truth is, the police cannot arrest their way out of it. It's not up to just the mayor. It's not up to just the county executives. These are not the folks who are the ones who should be taking responsibility. It's the community and the families and the parents of these children and systems that are broken and creating this problem that somehow we have to fix.
The other heartbreaking story also related to gun violence, guns, and young people, Prince George's County, first day of school, everybody looking forward to it. And what happens? Two gun-related arrests at Suitland High School. A 16-year-old who also had an outstanding warrant for a carjacking back in June, and then an 18-year-old who allegedly had a gun. But the thing that was really disturbing is that the 16-year-old allegedly had a gun with an extended magazine as well as a laser scope. What on earth is going on, Tracy?
Yeah, loaded.
Yeah, I mean, loaded.
Both of these guns were loaded handguns inside of the school. It's like the school year picked up where it left off, because at the end of the school year, we had a number of incidents dealing with ghost guns. You know, the one upside to this is that if you have these kids who are coming in armed, there seems to be a pattern of other kids knowing about it. Mm-hmm. Either showing them the guns or they've told them or whatever the case may be, and kids are turning in other students who are doing the wrong thing. They want to be safe in their schools too. And I think that there's a part of that part of all of this that gets missed, right? Because the majority of our kids are doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of our kids are living their lives in a way where they want what's best for themselves, their people, the people around them in this community. It's the minority that are out of control, and they get the spotlight, right? Every time they get the spotlight. But we can't say enough about the kids who are heroes in this situation, who say, not on my watch, and put themselves in a position where they could also be in danger by reporting this. And the other side of this is that their privacy is respected, their anonymity is respected when they come forward, but it is definitely a difficult position for kids to have to turn in other kids. We know what peer pressure is like.
Absolutely.
But they have been doing it, and thank goodness they've been doing it, because who knows what we'd be dealing with if it didn't happen. But yeah, that's where the school year ended. But the number of ghost guns making their way into the schools, students reporting it, police coming and arresting these students. I've seen the arrests. I've seen them take kids out of the school and put them in the back of squad cars. And so, yeah, no, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It is heartbreaking. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Let me take a quick phone call here. Beverly calling from D.C. Beverly, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
My pleasure, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The question that I wanted to pose to the panel was, what type of investigation and emphasis is in practice to find out who is putting these guns in the hands of children in terms of gun sellers, those that sell guns, and also those that are adults that are putting the guns in these children's hands? I don't think that a 15-year-old can go into a gun shop and buy a gun. I could be mistaken, but even if that's the case, I would really like to understand how the gun selling is impacting this uptick in gun violence in our city. And I'll sign off and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Troy, you want to take a crack at that first?
Me?
Yeah.
I think, you know, certainly in Washington, D.C., having a gun is illegal. You're not supposed to have them. Mississippi, certainly a different situation. This is a state where there are gun shows on a regular basis. So if you have people selling guns legally, guess what? There's probably somebody selling guns illegally. And I wanted to hit on something that Tracy was talking about. You know, we talk about the first day of school. You got to have fresh Jordans, have to have your new outfit and all that stuff. And I think in the same kind of way that you know, young people may want to kind of floss and kind of show off their style, I think that there is a gun culture across you know, racial lines and socioeconomic lines. When you see guns in rap videos, and I'm a rap fan, I'm not here to belittle the rap industry or that type of music. I'm not saying that. But there definitely are, just like there are cars and liquor and things that are promoted in some of those songs, they're also guns. If you've heard the term Draco, then you know that's a gun. And it's not only just a gun, it's an extended banana clip pistol with a long barrel. It kind of looks like a sawed off machine gun. It's the hot gun. Mm-hmm. And I think that some kids are like, yo, if I want the latest Jordans or the latest car that's out, then those that have means and those, you know, maybe they want to get those too. And I could see someone taking a gun on the first few days of school, trying to kind of quote unquote show off. And then they find themselves in a world of trouble, or they came to start something. One or the other.
And real quick, Tracy, I mean, we know that the black market for illegal guns and now ghost guns has been thriving for decades upon decades. And to the caller's question, it's nothing new.
Yeah, but there's been a victory in D.C. when it comes to ghost guns, with the Attorney General securing this $4 million in a recent settlement against one of the manufacturers of ghost guns because they're untraceable, right? So that is helpful. The Maryland legislature has also approved legislation that will make the sale of ghost guns in Maryland or any unserialized gun illegal. So what that does is at least put some eyes on what's happening with the internet sales of these guns and the manufacturing when it comes to that. The black market part, that is a much bigger issue. That comes back down to policing, though, that part of making sure that illegal guns are not being sold on the streets of D.C. and in Maryland and Virginia. That's something that police have to do, that the FBI, that the ATF, that's work that they have to do. But in terms of making sure that your child doesn't have one in the house or isn't packing it in their book bag, that's something parents can do.
Yeah.
And you know your child. So what are they bringing to school? Because it's just supposed to be books. And are you paying attention? Are you paying attention to what they're leaving the house with and what they have in their room? It's your property. And the CEO of the Prince George's County School System said this with her back-to-school speech. Look at your property. Look at the book bag you bought and what's in it. Okay. Look at the room that you own and what's in it. And I think if everyone's working together, we may see some different outcomes.
Real quick before I go to the break, Jay, 20 seconds, what's on your mind?
Hey, what's going on, folks?
Go ahead.
I'm going to just sum it up like this. As individuals in the community that's being adversely affected by any sort of undesirable behavior, we are the aggressive bottom line. Be it of the government or any sort of facility, they are there to assist in the public access as far as assistance with funding. But as the people, just from being like a child mind, children need the ones that know to be involved in them. We're having children grow up and teach themselves.
Yeah.
And then the adults are sitting there wondering why these jokers are doing that.
Like, yeah.
And it's a catch 22 because even the system is created where the parents got to go work.
Yeah.
And carry on and so forth.
But yeah, but let me stop you there because black parents. And parents in general have always worked.
Well, that's again the fact that, the community has been disregarded in this fact. That's my point. Like
yeah.
The neighbors was able to address matters when it comes to the behavior. We're not talking about.
I said 20 seconds. I gave you a whole minute. Got to go. That's all right. Got to take a quick break. Thank you so much. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the day. And boy, do we have some doozies, including what happened regarding the late former mayor of Hyattsville. Also, Prince George's County police officers indicted, more than a dozen of them. And that is just getting started. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. If you're on the phone, don't hang up. You will be able to hear the program. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week, and we have some doozies. My guests are Tracy Wilkins, Prince George's County Bureau Chief for NBC4 Washington, and Troy Johnson, anchor reporter for WAPT-TV in Jackson, Mississippi. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tracy, I'll start with you. It seems like everything Prince George's County, that's where all of the news seems to be coming from this week. The former mayor of Hyattsville, the late Kevin Ward, accused of stealing $2.2 million from KIPP DC. That was a shocker.
Yeah, so he worked for KIPP DC. He was in charge of acquiring the technology assets for that school. And when they went into the pandemic and had to do distance learning, he was charged with getting the students the technology they needed to be successful during that period. And so what the Department of Justice is saying is that he was taking money from KIPP and producing these fraudulent invoices and then going out and buying a fleet of luxury vehicles, a couple of Teslas, like three Jeeps, a number of other vehicles, a camper, sports memorabilia, two pieces of property in West Virginia. And all of this under a company that evidently he created with contacts that he made up. And none of that existed. So there's so many questions at the end of all of this. And for people in Hyattsville, and I've got to say this to be clear, this was a beloved community leader.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who you talk to will say Ward was so dedicated to the mission of Hyattsville, to what mattered to its citizens. And so people were in absolute shock. The city of Hyattsville was very clear in saying that they didn't have any financial impropriety on their end and that they had systems in place that would protect assets there in the city. KIPP DC is saying, well, now we're getting those systems in order after what's happened here, and we are going to make sure that this doesn't happen again. This was money that came from a grant. It wasn't a federal grant. This wasn't federal money, but the Department of Justice is involved, and they are trying to seize those assets and try to recoup as much money as possible for KIPP DC. And the work that KIPP does is just amazing. I mean, they are, you know, an important part, an essential part of the success of children who attend those charter schools, and they have a great success rate. It was very disappointing for all involved.
Do you have any idea how KIPP found out, or whether or not Ward was aware that he was being investigated? As we know, he took his own life in January of this year, self-inflicted gunshot wound in a park in Hyattsville.
It appears that he was aware that he was under investigation, just based on the timeline and what was happening. But for sure, KIPP found out when they weren't getting the laptops. You know, they lay it out in the complaint, in the civil complaint. They lay it out very well, where, you know, there was a back and forth between Ward and leaders of the school who were saying, you know, where are the laptops? Where are the iPads or whatever it is that he was supposed to be purchasing? And the response being, oh, they haven't arrived yet. Let me check back with my contact and see if I can figure out what's going on with that. And, you know, I'll circle back, kind of deal. And, yeah, no, it never showed up, and that's what led to the audit that then led to the questions that they had.
Troy, very disappointing, heartbreaking again. You know, Hyattsville, it's one of those old bedroom communities right outside of D.C., but, it is having its great sparks. I mean, this community is growing and people are moving there, and it's just not the kind of publicity that city needs, even if it's, you know, as Tracy was saying, Hyattsville says no financial impropriety there, but still not a good look.
It's not a good look. It obviously reflects negatively on all of that love that he got while he was around, so many people that he helped. It tarnishes his legacy. Beyond that, it changes the way the school district is going to have to approach making these key purchases. So the bottom line, so kids get the tools that they need to continue their education, you know, they're going to have to, they've talked about, changing that purchasing arrangement that they have with whoever is going to be in charge of making those decisions. Now you have to dot your I's and cross your T's, which of course slows the process down. So kids that do need laptops and iPads for their homework, they're going to have to wait a little bit longer possibly to get the tools that they need. So it's just extremely heartbreaking and disappointing that this something like this happened.
Yeah, and the thing that really does, bother me, crime is crime, theft is theft, and that's bad enough. But the bottom line was that if these allegations are indeed true, he was taking from children.
Yeah.
And we know that, as Tracy, suggested, we were talking about these things happening during the pandemic when resources are short, and it's difficult for children who are trying to get educated in urban communities where there are always, questions about, are they getting what they need? Do they have laptops? Do they have computers? Do they have Wi-Fi? Do they have all of this kind of stuff? And adults that are working for school systems, we are charged with taking care of these children. And for this to happen, that's upsetting. Let me go back to...
go ahead. When we broke the story, when we talked about the news value of it, part of what was very clear to me was that there are going to be charter schools, there are going to be schools, there are going to be systems that don't have these internal systems that we need in place to ensure that money that is given to support the mission of these institutions, that they get one, that they pay attention to these things, and that we don't take these things for granted. We had a very similar incident happen at the University of Maryland with someone who was now facing charges for stealing equipment, someone else who was in charge of acquisitions of technology and then is accused of selling it. So all of this stuff is important for these institutions to understand. We have to take a second look at our security and how we secure the money that we are entrusted with, federal money, any kind of grant. It's important that those funds are protected.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shay, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Shay. What's on your mind?
I was calling and want to make a comment about the kids and the gun violence.
Sure.
As an adult and being a parent to a teenager dealing with the gun violence, it's more of some of the kids that are taking the guns to school, it's more of they're scared. They want the education, they want to learn, they want to go to school, but when your life is threatened, it's hard to focus and even make it to school safely without trying to carry something. And when you know someone's out here trying to get you and you're just trying to go to school and you're just trying to live, you got to have some protection. I'm not saying that guns are the way to protect themselves, but in this day and age, they have nothing else. We as parents can't go out there and fight their battles. Times are different from when in the 90s and then even in the early 2000s, they're totally different. We as parents have to listen to our kids. When we were growing up, we were seen but not heard. This day and age, we gotta listen to our kids. The community has to come together and actually help go inside the home and help the parent too. Don't just keep accusing the parent, because sometimes the parent has done all they can. They've reached out for resources. They've reached out for counseling. They've reached out for help from the government agencies. And a lot of times, the resources are not there. They're saying that they are there, but they're so overwhelmed that they can't get to your child.
Yeah.
And so as a community, we need to come together and go into these households and help the parents. Stop worrying about how do we get there. Because as we can see, we can keep asking that question over and over again, pointing the finger, but it's not working. It hasn't worked for over 10-plus years. We need to go in the households and help the parents. As the parent, you know you're overwhelmed. What can we do to help? We got to get to know our neighbors. Go back to the old days when the community when it took a village to raise these kids.
Okay.
We have to get back to that and stop trying to make these kids be adults too fast. We have to let them go through the milestones. And with the way the times are set up now, they're missing all these milestones. They have to go from children to adults too quick.
Okay. Well, Shay, thank you so much. Real quick about what Shay was saying, and you know, Tracy, I'll start with you. One of the things that I heard where she was saying, go in and we've got to help these parents. And you're a young parent, you know, I'm an old parent, but you know, the thing that I would say is that perhaps some of these parents do not have the parenting skills and you know that our parents had we have, and and also as parents, you know, the old parents and the Tracy Wilkins of the world,
about me? Am I old parent?
Yeah,
I'm in the old parent category.
but you know, I would say that you know we parents, you know, my age, you know, our age here, we didn't have some of the things that we had to deal that these newer parents have to deal with now.
Yeah, well, first of all, the kids have access to so much.
Yeah.
Right? The information that they have, it's on a whole other level. How to parent with what kids know and understand and what they have access to is complicated, right? But the basics still apply. So the question is, do we understand the basics? One of the things that's changed when the sister said we need to go back to how we were as a community, the idea of what community looks like now is so drastically altered from when neighbor knew neighbor. Because now there are some communities where you don't need to know your neighbor. You can get in trouble knowing your neighbor and knowing what your neighbor's doing. And your neighbor could be putting the entire block in danger, could be putting your home in danger. And so maybe you know every other neighbor, or maybe you know the neighbors who you feel safe knowing in a lot of these communities. And it's that fracture that causes part of the issue with the whole community being able to raise a kid anymore. And you have parents who don't want help raising their kid. They don't want you to help discipline their child when the child is doing the wrong thing. They don't even want their family to mm-hmm. discipline the child when the child is doing the wrong thing. So we are not on the same page for what we want to do for our kids and how we want to approach that. But one of the things that the sister said, and I'm happy she brought that up because it is such an important point, that we have teens who are scared of each other.
Yes.
You know, that idea of I'm bringing a gun because I want to live. I'm bringing a gun because they want to fight me. I'm bringing a gun because more, not just fight me, they want to kill me. And they will. Mm-hmm. That part is what is part of the reason that the juvenile justice system is doing what it's doing with a lot of kids, and that is understanding that they're dealing with stress that's above and beyond what their brains can handle, and it's real stress, and that some of the decisions they're making with limited options. And so folks are asking questions like, why do kids get locked up for these, you know, violent crimes or for having guns and getting released again? That's part of the reason why. It's such a complicated issue. It really is going to take the kinds of resources, money, and ideas that our community just historically hasn't gotten to fix it.
Yeah. Real quick, I need to pivot. We've got one more Prince George's County story before we get to this water everywhere and none to drink in Jackson. Prince George's County police officers last week, Tracy, more than a dozen indicted. All this stuff coming out of Prince George's County, I'm just wondering when you even have a chance to sleep.
This story, Harold, I mean, as you know, I've been following this story, what happened with these indictments, for, I want to say, the last 2 years.
Yeah.
We broke when one of the first officers was arrested, who then the rest of this just started to unravel after that arrest of Lieutenant Finn and one of the officers who reported to him. And then all of this was revealed after that first arrest. And then to see at the end of the day that we had 14 officers, 13 who are current and one who's retired, who was indicted and are charged with being involved in a double-dipping scheme, working while getting credit for working for the Prince George's County Police Department, working under a former lieutenant in his security firm, and providing security to apartments and other places while they're getting paid by the county to be doing work in the county. So then a whole bunch of questions with that, right? So, like, who was patrolling when you were supposed to be on patrol? Were there crimes that happened that you were supposed to be taken care of and you didn't, right? And the lawlessness of it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it ties into so many of the stories we've been covering when it comes to what's going on with the Prince George's County Police Department. Like, for instance, that federal civil suit that the officers of color and women won in that department, saying that, yeah, you know, the way that officers of color are disciplined is so extreme, and part of the reason that they were frustrated is because they knew about these officers who were doing double dipping, who were, you know, involved in all of these other things happening. I mean, as I mentioned this at the press conference with the new chief, this didn't happen under his watch, it was the former chief. It happened under the former chief's watch. But when I said, you know, this was an open secret, people knew about this. And the reaction was, oh, was it? No, I don't know if it was. And I was like, well, when are we going to start being honest about what was going on and what may still be happening within the department that needs to be dealt with? Because the culture that comes from this, you know, we're not even getting to who approved the overtime and the chain of command and who knew what when, and are all of those people gone? And what does it look like when you have officers who are not being truthful, allegedly, with the county police department about their overtime, but they're here looking at what's going on in your apartment? What was life like for those people?
You know,
how were they presenting themselves in those spaces?
Troy, one could easily just use a five-letter word and you know, because of these, you know, alleged crimes, and they could say, well, it's just greed. But the thing that, you know, this is just bigger than, you know, one or two officers allegedly not doing what they're supposed to do. This is, a basketball team and some guys sitting on the bench waiting, you know, coach put me in. There are a lot of people involved in this.
There are, and we are in the midst of questions already about policing in America, that people have about how, you know, policing is done in specific communities. This is the era of Baltimore's Gun Trace Task Force,
mm-hmm.
where you have sworn officers who were stealing from criminals, enriching themselves, and now you have this situation with Prince George's County Police. You know, you're talking about people double-dipping, grift. I mean, it's whatever you want to call it. It's unbelievable, as we talked about in an earlier segment, we were talking about education, the responsibility that you have when you put on a badge or you step into a classroom. It's much higher than someone with just some job. You know, you are taking an oath. You are swearing that you will protect and serve in this particular situation. And as Tracy alluded to actually be somewhere that you are unauthorized to be, oftentimes in uniform with a service weapon and a badge, in full uniform, getting paid on the side during your shift, when the possibility of an actual crime could be happening somewhere else,
yeah.
That's unconscionable.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, as she mentioned, if this is an open secret, that the two words accountability and transparency are supposed to be addressing in that department, I'm thinking that there probably are people who full well, as she said, knew about this, and they are also going to, I'm sure there's someone who, even after these punishments are handed down, somebody likely would still be in that force that may have participated or known full well about it. I don't think that you're going to get the degree of transparency that you need to make sure that something like this doesn't happen in that department.
Let's
hope for that.
Let's talk about Jackson, Mississippi. The phrase "come hell or high water" comes to mind, Troy, and you all have both down there. Where are we today?
Which way do you want to go? First of all, I think what obviously over the last, the news cycle over the last week or so, raised a lot of people's attention because of the Pearl River flooding. The Pearl River runs through Jackson, and 2 years ago there was a flood that damaged a lot of homes. There are a lot of neighborhood cul-de-sacs. If you can imagine, you know, neighborhoods that kind of, in a way, look like Prince George's County, older homes that are kind of little small subdivisions that back up to this river that flooded. And, you know, when there's a flood situation, it disrupts so many people's lives. You know, the problem with this is, as you can imagine, if you had flooding 2 years ago in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, people are losing their homes, there could have been, let's say, 1 to 3 feet of water in someone's home. That's not enough to get FEMA reimbursement. You got to have a significant flood. But 1 to 2 feet of water in anybody's home, forget about it.
Right.
That's significant damage that a lot of people are on the hook for themselves, or they're going to have to get insurance. Not everybody has flood insurance. I mean, you know, you can just imagine the litany of things. But anyway, fast forward, you get through COVID, you mitigate the floodwaters in your home, and a lot of people just getting things back to normal, and there's flooding again. So it's a complicated situation, because north of Jackson is what is called the Barnett Reservoir, which is it's about 36 miles around, millions of gallons of water. There are a lot of waterfront homes in that area, and there is a there's a dam at the end of it, and they have to release water out of that dam lock to keep the reservoir from flooding, which would, as the flood control folks say, would jeopardize homes and property north of the reservoir, and it would also impact flooding of the water system in Jackson. So I'm getting around to the circle in just a moment. So they were releasing 65,000 gallons of water per second for days. That water comes through there, and of course it eventually floods in areas of northeast Jackson. It's a problem that doesn't have a long-term fix. There is a project called the One Lake Project that has been talked about. The Army Corps of Engineers and other organizations, local officials have discussed this for the last 30 or 40 years. They're talking about widening the Pearl River and deepening it so the waters will go through the Jackson Metro without flooding anybody's homes. That means you'd have to buy properties around the water and, you know, give people an amount like we're destroying this home because we're widening the width of the river.
But Troy, let me stop you because I only have a little time left. The bottom line is right now, do you have water? Can you drink it?
Well, let me get to that. The good news is the floodwaters have receded.
Yeah.
The day they crested a day early, and the same day is when we found out that we had this water crisis with the Jackson water system. Let me say it briefly. This is not a new issue for people who live in Jackson. They have been under a boil water notice for the last 33 days now. Which, of course, means you can't drink the water coming out of the faucet. But now the pump issues with one of the water treatment centers caused the pressure to go down, and that contributed to people not having sanitary water in their home to flush toilets and stuff like that. So, one, you can't drink the water. Two, now you can't flush the toilet in many communities. They're trying to mitigate that. The state has now stepped in. The Governor Tate Reeves signed an emergency order. President Biden has addressed that, and the mayor and the governor, I believe, I know the mayor for sure, has spoken to President Biden today and Vice President Kamala Harris. So that will trigger some federal dollars coming in here along with state help. This is an old infrastructure. Many cities are dealing with the same kinds of problems. It is neglect. It is it's everything from
and it's a black city,
a 82% black city with white flight, and let's also frame that in the lens of we're talking about the state of Mississippi, where you know not very long ago we know the racial problems that we had in this state, and if I got a dollar for you, if you think that they've all been mitigated away. There are always long shadows over problems that we've had historically in this country, and no other place other than Jackson, Mississippi, exhibits that on a daily basis.
Real quick, I only have a few minutes.
Go ahead,
Tracy, because I've got to get to your last story. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I lived in Mississippi for almost a year. My husband's from Mississippi. Grew up right outside of Starkville, and went to JSU, went to Jackson State. So I'm very familiar with that area, and what you just said, I think, is the most important part of it. In Mississippi, the feeling is that the racism, and it's in some parts of Maryland, it's the same way, and that it is so a part of the fabric of how that place operates that when you're in it, it's almost hard to tell how pervasive it actually is because it's just the way things have always been. This infrastructure issue is a prime example of that. And you can go down the list to things like education, to roads, you can go down to the Delta where the water is still yellow, and they'll tell you it makes great sweet tea. I disagree.
I would not.
No, don't do it.
Swipe tie. Right. No, none of that. I will say, Tracy, that you did definitely have a journalistic victory when you got the state of Maryland to cut that grass on 210 and other parts of Prince George's County. I certainly salute you. Give me the Crib Notes version on this grass issue that is, I mean, I've said it before, it looked like elephant grass in Vietnam.
Mm. Yeah. We went down to Fort Washington to do a story about the new hospital, right? And so they're going to get a whole new Fort Washington hospital. We know that Prince George's County is a medical desert. So when you hear new hospital, you would think that people would be super excited about that. And I couldn't get from our man on the street interviews anyone to talk about the hospital. Like, oh, you guys are getting a new hospital. What do you think about it? Here are the drawings. I think they need to come cut this grass. That's what I mean. Come down here and do something about what they're doing. And I was like, okay, but we're not going to talk about the hospital. No, they need to come down here and get this trash, and they need to do. And there were so many complaints about it that it was obvious this is the story. Community organizations have been working with the state and meeting down there in Fort Washington and talking and saying, you know, what can we do? Trying to work within the system to fix what had become a problem. So we do this story. We talk with one of those groups about what they're doing. And the state says, yeah, we're going to go ahead and step up. Because come to find out, the four contractors they hired to do that work in the county, all four of the contracts are no longer working. Like they're not. They had one contractor who they believe over or underbid it, and over thought that they could meet the expectations but couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cheap, but just didn't have the resources to do it. And other contractors that just didn't do the work they said they were going to do. So there's an issue with the contracting process. The state's going to have to take a look at that and figure what that was. But of course, for folks in Prince George's County, the feeling was we're being neglected. What we have found from our reporting is that there are other parts of the state where people are feeling like they're not getting their grass cut like they should as well.
Yeah.
But it really is an issue in the county. Mm. The numbers showed it was. They also need to take a look at how they're funding Prince George's County versus some of the other parts of the state for maintenance, because there are just more state highway mouths in Prince George's than anywhere else. So, yeah, it's a big deal. But we were happy to see them out there cutting the grass. And because the community, our communities need to look good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
like
just,
everybody
it's
else.
It's important to the folks paying all these taxes. Yeah.
Troy, you should have seen her stand up. You couldn't see her. The grass was just too high.
That's why the people didn't want to talk about the hospital. They couldn't see it. The grass was too high.
Absolutely. Tracy Wilkins, Troy Johnson, thank you both for being a part of the program. Troy, don't drink the water. Stay dry, my friend.
No.
All right.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, August 31st. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.